We need to design and test today all kind of innovations that are possible to secure our future for the children and for ourselves today.
What does the floating farm look like?
Every city in the world has approximately for 2 or 3 days fresh food.
Are there any requirements for cities besides having some form of water close to the city?
Fritz for Future, Henkel's sustainability podcast.
There are more than 30 cows located in the harbor of Rotterdam in the Netherlands right now. This may sound a little strange, but it is actually one of the most innovative ideas to supply cities with healthy food. It's the first floating farm in the world. The cows live on the water and provide dairy products to locals. In today's episode, I'm connected to Peter van Wingerden, the founder of Floating Farm. Welcome, Peter. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Janine. It's great to be in your podcast. Thank you so much.
Peter, you had the idea for the floating farm while being in New York. What happened at that time?
So I was in New York a while ago because I wanted to do something floating, and we were designing a floating housing project on the Hudson River in New York, just across Manhattan. When I was there, New York was hit by a hurricane, a very famous one. It's called Hurricane Sandy. And the effects of Hurricane Sandy was the city was completely flooded. 2 meters of water in the city. And the effects of this flooding was that the stores could not be provided with healthy food. So every city in the world has approximately for 2 or 3 days fresh food. And we are depending on transportation on our daily food completely. But because the city was completely flooded, there was no transportation possible at that moment. And we were working on this floating housing project, being totally independent on any climate change. And then we thought maybe it's even more important to produce healthy food inside cities, no matter how high sea level rises, no matter how much rain falls. Let's build a farm inside the city. So that's when we went back from New York to our office over here in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. And I said to the engineers in our team, guys, we're going to build a farm on the water. We're going to start designing and engineering it. And everybody said, yes, let's do that. And that's how it started.
But what is your professional background? Are you an engineer? Because you don't have experiences in farming.
No, that's correct. I don't have an agriculture background. I'm an engineer by profession. I love technologies. My partner, Minka, she comes from the north of our country. She's grown up more around meadows and animals and vegetables. So we combined these and we started to design, and we hired many, many specialists to make the most sustainable farm. So we collaborate with universities in our country, the University of Wageningen. It's a very famous food university. And the university in Delft is a technology university, to design something that is very animal friendly, that is extremely sustainable, and that is part of the city, so also extremely circular. So my background is an engineer because I love technology. We are biotechnologists.
And to give our listeners an idea and a picture, what does the floating farm look like? How would you describe it?
Fact check.
Yeah, so it's a pretty large building. It's a three-layer building. The size is 30 by 30 meters. So 30 meters wide, 30 meters long. So that's 900 square meters per floor. We have 3 floors. On the top floor are our cows living in a fully automated, very animal-friendly barn with a milking robot and a manure robot because cows producing milk, but also manure and urine. On the middle floor is our processing area. This is where we process the milk daily into fresh dairy products like yogurt and butter and buttermilk and cheeses. And in the level below the waterline, so 1/3 of the building is below the waterline, that is where we ripen our cheeses. And that is also where we produce our vegetables. So we have a vegetable installation, a high-tech installation, 3 layers called vertical farming, multi-layer farming, where we produce fresh basil, peppermint, lettuce that we sell in the city. So it's a 3-layer building, 30 by 30 meters wide, and then that's it.
Okay, that's really huge. So do the cows have to stay on the farm, or is there a possibility for them to go out on pasture?
Yeah, so maybe to explain a little bit about cows, your listeners who are farmers, they know exactly what I'm saying, but a cow is an animal who produces milk, and she does that preferably or only when she's laying down. So cows lay down about 12, 13 hours per day. So the most important part is a bed, a very good place to lay down. A cow eats approximately 5 to 6 hours. So the second most important thing is fresh food and fresh water. So if you take care of a good bed and always fresh food, then she's very, very happy. And a cow hates sunshine and she hates rain. So she wants to be in the shadow as much as she can. We designed our barn like this, but she can also go outside whenever she likes. We have a little pasture around our farm, and the cow can choose if she wants to be inside or outside. It's a free-range cow, and we measure continuously if she is inside or outside. And most of the time, she's actually inside the farm because she prefers shade. Again, she hates rain and she hates the sun. She wants to be in a shady place and also close to the milking robot. So she doesn't have to walk that far, as she can always be milked by the milking robot.
Let's talk about your clients. Who are they? So do only private people purchase from your farm, or are your clients grocery stores, for example, or perhaps even restaurants?
Yeah, so for us, it's really important to be circular. So we are part of circular cities. Many, many cities are looking to be more green and biodiverse. So we are part of this biodiversity inside the city with our farm. And that means that we collaborate with all kind of companies inside the city. So to give you an example, we receive organic feed waste from retailers like the Spar, for instance, is one of the big retailers over here. They are pressing fresh orange juice. We get the orange peels. They're very interesting feedstock. It goes to the cows. They turn it into dairy products that goes back to the retailers, back to the city. So we have our own store over here at the farm, and we work for the retailers in the city. We also supply to our hotels in the city. We supply to restaurants in the city. So we have a mixture of customers in the city and at our store over here at the farm.
Let's stay at the circularity topic. So I believe the farm in itself is one cycle, but it can go even further than that if we include the city. So this is what you described before. Is that right?
Many cities are interested in upgrading, upscaling organic waste. And that's where animals come in. So to give you an example, we work with retailers like the Spar I mentioned. If they press orange juice, the orange peel is not going to the garbage, but comes to the cows and they turn it into milk again. But we also work with turkeys, all kind of bakeries in our cities. We get the leftover of the bread. We work with the food banks. We get the leftover from the food banks. We measure everything, how much fiber is in there, how much vitamins, minerals. We upgrade it to dairy again, and that goes back to the city. So we have indeed this city circularity. We also work with the football stadiums. We get the grass from the pitches of the football stadium. So we are part of this circularity inside the city that creates also a lot of awareness for people. But inside the building, because we are a three-layer building and one third is below the waterline, we also are using and reusing heat and cold inside the building. So being on the water means we use the cool temperature of the water to cool down processes. So also, indeed, we are circular inside the building, and the building is a circular part of the city.
So circularity is one huge part of sustainability, but there are more points on your floating farm you can give us that are very sustainable.
Yes, I think we are one of the most sustainable farms in the Netherlands and maybe in Europe, because we have no transportation. We have no food losses. We have no food miles because everything stays within the city. We are climate independent, so we are on the water. We have no problems with sea level rise or heavy rainfall. We have no droughts because we are on the water. We always have water. And water and food as a team is really essential. You cannot produce food without water. So also from that perspective, we are completely sustainable because everything is local, local, local. We collect rainwater. We do our own desalination technology of the river. We are in the port of Rotterdam. That is salt water because we're connected to the sea. We do desalination. So we are extremely sustainable and circular here in the port. Biodiversity, we are green. So since we are here, we have attracted bees, we have butterflies, we have birds, we have fish. So yes, we are a part of this very sustainable part of the city. Being a green city means, in our perspective, put a farm as an essential part of city design. It's what we call transformation. So not transformation, not transforming cities, but transforming cities. Putting a farm inside the city as part of a biodiverse city.
Yes, and you just mentioned your floating farm has no problems with rising sea levels, but are there really no problems when there's a storm or heavy rainfall?
There are no problems when there's a storm, and there's also no problems with heavy rainfall. We had that in our country many times. We have huge storms over here because we are in the port. It's an open area. We have a lot of storms and wind. We can handle that. The building is very strong, and so that's not a problem. Rainfall is also not a problem. Actually, we collect rain. We love rain because we collect it into drinking water. It could be a little bit less. I would love to see some sun, but as you know, like in Germany, it's raining a lot. That causes big problems, many, many floodings, many casualties, many damages. So we have to seriously think about the future because it's not getting any better. We expect even more rainfall. We expect even a higher sea level rising. We expect, on the other hand, more droughts. So we need to be very innovative to design our cities of the future because we know that this floodings and this rainfall and this droughts have major impact on agriculture. If you want to anticipate the future, you should not wait on the future. We should not wait another 10, 20, 30 years because it will happen more often, more frequently. So we need to design and test today all kind of innovations that are possible to secure our future for the children and for ourselves today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. So the cows don't have to be afraid that they get seasick.
No.
Can they get seasick?
No. They can get seasick. Like they're like human beings. So if you're too much shaky, you get seasick. But they have an advantage. They have four legs. We are only two. So they're much more stable. But besides that, one of the criteria that we get a permit is that the building should be completely stable. So they are not seasick. And like human beings, they can become seasick, but okay. They are not. And they're very happy.
They are not in danger.
They're not in danger. They provide every day very, very good milk. So we measure all kind of stuff like this. They're very happy.
And you mentioned that you do something interesting with the urine of the cows. What are you doing?
Yeah, so the cow produces not only milk, but also manure and urine. And we collect the manure and the urine. And from the manure, we turn it into nutrients that goes back to parks and gardens to feed the plants. And we are also experimenting now with the manure to turn it into bio-based materials. So we have building blocks. We are now test bedding the manure to turn it into building blocks or bio-based. Also bio-based plastics, which is a very interesting one. And the urine, we turn it into irrigation water. So we are collaborating with our University of Delft over here in the Netherlands. And we designed a process to take out the water out of the urine. And this is that irrigation water that we can use for the plants again. So in our building, we are not only doing milk and dairy, but we also producing vegetables. So the manure of the cows that we turn into nutrients can be used for the vegetables, and the urine that we turn into irrigation water can also be used for the vegetables again. This is a very interesting process that we can copy. It's small scale, but we can test bed and copy it everywhere in the world.
Indeed, it sounds so interesting. Maybe you can quickly summarize the benefits of your idea.
Yes, we see this climate change. We need to do something about it. We need to be innovative to secure that our food is being produced in this climate changing world. That's one. The water is a great option. The water is universal and very scalable. So our water is the same water as in Germany or in Bangladesh or in the United States. Water is universal. So if you build something over here, you can copy paste it everywhere in the world. That's one thing. We should absolutely reduce the food losses and the food miles. So many, many countries are importing huge amount of food. And that means that by the system that we created, by producing food far away, we're losing food. We have to put all kind of preservatives in the food to have a longer shelf life or to have a longer color or the better smell, just to maintain it like that. But 35% of all food produced is lost. 35% of food produced is lost, including the energy that we put in there, the nutrients, the water is lost. While on the other hand, there's 1 billion people who doesn't have food. So this food system needs to be changed by building local, climate independent. We have a solution to do that. Then building on the water means also that you can use the cooling facilities of the water. So it's scalable, it's universal, but it's also much cooler and much stable than the air. So by being on the water, our cows are much cooler in temperature and our vegetable production can be cooled by using the cool energy of the water instead of having external cooling machines. Using the cool temperature, being climate independent and being close to consumers are major facts of doing it over here as we do it.
Yes, and you said you can copy paste your floating farm all over the world. So I imagine a lot of cities are highly interested in having their own floating farm. Are there any requirements for cities besides having some form of water close to the city?
Yeah, so 90% of the major cities are connected to water. Most of them are connected to sea because they have been grown in the past by rivers or sea because of the port. So cities are grown around transportation in the past. Boats were the number one transport. So they grow around ports. So many, many cities have water. The requirements are not that big. We can simulate any kind of storm or current or wave that we can handle. So we have simulated a lot. The only thing that we did not simulate is a tsunami, but that doesn't occur in our part of the world. But we can be in many places and we should start looking into innovative solutions to take care of the future. And I strongly believe that we will not be ready to be 100% everywhere. Absolutely not. But if we can make 10, 20% of the cities more secure, more climate resilient with our solution, I think we're contributing a lot to the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's that adaptation issue.
Yeah.
That's very right. Important. So visionaries like you always have a next goal in mind. What plans do you have in store for your floating farm?
What's next?
We are being visited over here with about 70 groups per month. From United States to Japan, students, architects, ministers, everybody is coming to look over here because they're all facing the same climate change challenges. So our plan is to scale up. We had to scale down during COVID, obviously, but that's all behind us now. So the world is open again. We travel a lot. We do a lot of talks on stages. So we will grow. We will grow in buildings. We will grow in food types. We will be more and more circular and sustainable as much as possible. So it's very interesting to build and design these buildings in many different type of countries. So countries who are very hot and humid or hot and dry or cold. I would suggest we should be much more united as countries and large companies in the world to create technologies that helps the world in the future. So my goal is to keep on telling this story, designing and building it in different climate situations and see how we can help the next step in securing food production in the world and reducing all the food losses. That is my goal, actually. Mm.
Let's come back to your floating farm in Rotterdam. How many people are you able to supply with the farm right now, and how many people should it be in the future?
Yeah, so we did this first building. It's actually a small scale building. There's only three layers, and one layer is below the waterline. It can be much wider and longer easily, but it can also be much higher. So it can go 8 stories high or 10 stories high. We have the technology to do that. So with our current building, we can feed about 10,000 people over here, but we are here in one of the biggest ports in Europe. We can feed a large portion of our city. We didn't calculate how much, but the same goes for Hamburg or Frankfurt or Antwerp, all port cities and rivers and ports. So we have to calculate it and see it per city. It also differs. So in our country, we have a lot of dairy consumers. In other countries, there are more vegetable consumers. We have designed chicken as well, so we can produce eggs. We can make combinations of vegetables, dairy, and eggs. We're looking into insects production. We're looking into fish. So we're just at the beginning, actually, and we can feed a large part of the world as long as it is local and sustainable and circular. And we're just in the beginning of this journey, actually.
Yeah, it sounds like that. So I promise I will visit the floating farm during my next trip to Rotterdam. This was such an inspiring conversation, Peter. Thank you for your time and your huge commitment to a better and a more sustainable future. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. You're very welcome to visit the farm. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into Fritz for Future. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as we did, show us some love by leaving a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our channel. You have an innovative sustainability project or an inspiring guest in mind, or perhaps just a burning question you'd like to ask us? Then send us a message to fritzforfuture@henkel.com. We are looking forward to having you join us for our next episode. I'm Janine, your host, and this is Fritz for Future, Henkel Sustainability Podcast. Take care.
Fritz for Future, Henkel Sustainability Podcast.